Yeah?
Okay. I'd like to call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. And we do have a quorum today. First thing we're going to start with is we have, shouldn't take very long. I just want to adopt the last two performance-based measures that we have in the budget. We have Post-Secondary Education Commission. And if you want to join us at the table, whoever you'd like. Have you seen the final sheets?
Yes, for the record, Diane Behrens, Executive Director of Commission.
And did you have any problems with them?
Nope.
Would you like to move them, Richard?
Both of them? I'll move them both.
Move, please.
Okay. Go ahead and move. At least move post-secondary.
The Election Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Okay, is there any objection? We're all done with that one. Thank you. Is there anybody here from Aaron Walk? Water quality? Doesn't look like it. I think my understanding is we have had, they do agree with these measures, so Representative Foster, would you like to move this?
I would like to move the air and water quality at this time, and I suppose you can always bring it up if there's a problem.
Yep, if there's a problem, we'll have them, we can amend them later. Any objections? Hearing none, that's been adopted as well. Ben, you missed the performance-based adoptions. It took about 2 minutes, so I knew you'd be disappointed. But and I'll turn it over to Representative Terrio for the bills section.
Okay.
What are you starting with?
I think I will start with I'd like to start with Senate Bill 299, please. If the members would pull that out. And we have Senator Lehman is chairing a Senate hearing at this time, so we have a representative of his staff, Annette Kreitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Annette Kreitzer, and I'm staff to Senator Lauren Lehman, who is the sponsor of the legislation in front of you. Senate Bill 299 amends Alaska's air quality control statute to clarify that non-road engines are mobile sources and are not to be regulated as though they are stationary facilities. Those are federal terms, EPA terms. In Section 1, the bill provides guidance on the treatment of well test flares. A well test flare is not a part of a rig. A well test flare is brought onto a drill site after a well is completed. It allows an operator to evaluate a well's potential flow of oil and or gas. Normally, only gas is burned at the test flare. The associated oil and water are collected in storage tanks to be either re-injected downhole or transported to a production facility. Section 2 adds the EPA and state-adopted regulatory definition of non-road engines to Alaska statute so that owners and operators have the same understanding at the state level that they do at the federal level of what a non-road engine is. Excuse me. In addition, the bill adds the federal definition of what a stationary source is. Some people have asked why this bill is necessary. Senator Lehman spent many hours in subcommittee meetings in the Senate Resources Committee in 1993 helping to draft Alaska's Title V air program. Mobile sources of emission were one of several contentious issues. The legislature as a whole agreed that industry and DEC should have the opportunity to work through the remaining contentious issues involved in the Clean Air Act and try to come to consensus on those issues. It's been almost 5 years. Most of the issues have been worked out. Now it appears that DEC intends to go beyond the minimum set under the Federal Clean Air Act. There are at most 20 rigs on the North Slope and Cook Inlet. Drilling rigs are in place on average somewhere between 7 and 30 days in one place. I'll close with an analogy that's helped me put this issue into perspective. If I think of my house as a stationary source, necessitating a Title V permit because I heat my house with fuel, I hire the neighbor's kid to mow my lawn, and now I have to include his lawnmower in the permit for my house as though he's mowing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Then that impacts how warm I can keep my house under my permit. It's a pretty simple story, but I think it accurately reflects the situation, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions for Ms. Kreitzer? Seeing none, we do have a number of people here to testify. And we have a number of people in Anchorage. First of all, why don't we go to the teleconference? We have Patty Saunders to testify, and then Pamela Miller. Ms. Saunders, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with your testimony, please.
My name is Patty Saunders, and I'm testifying on my own behalf as a citizen and a constituent of Senator Lehman. I am opposed to SB 299 for a number of reasons. I am appalled by the process that is being employed to rush this bill through the legislature without thoughtful from the people who would be most affected by this, or by the people, the scientists and the doctors, who are most likely to have the information that is needed to say whether this bill is, as it's being portrayed, an innocuous realignment of definitions, or whether it in fact is going to affect the health of Alaskan citizens and Alaskan workers. I think that it is appalling that we have had several hearings that are the testimony is by invitation only, and the only people who've been invited are industry representatives, the so-called regulated industry, which I might say is about to be unregulated industry if this bill goes through. I think citizens have a right to be heard, and I think particularly in the areas where this is going to have most impact. And I don't think that the legislative information offices in those areas have even been added on the teleconference site. So. I'm extremely upset by this process. Beyond that, I have, over the course of the last 15 years, had many occasions to read the Clean Air Act, and while it is extremely complex, there are a few basics that anyone who reads it will get, and that is that there are two divisions between mobile and stationary sources, and they have very different sets of regulations, and they're designed to take into account the types and amounts of pollution that comes from those sources and the different ways in which they need to be regulated to protect human health and the environment. And I think that it is both a serious question of illogic and a serious confusion and perversion of the intent of the Federal Clean Air Act, which our Clean Air Act is supposed to follow, to define what is in fact a stationary source as a mobile source, as if it were a vehicle. I don't care whether it's possible to move something around if it sits still and is attached to things that are otherwise stationary. If it's not in fact a vehicle, which is what mobile sources are, it doesn't belong in the mobile source category. So I'm really concerned that if this shell game of redefinition goes through, that there will be serious implications for the state regulatory program on air pollution, and that we may end up with that program going back to the federal government, which I'm not sure is a good thing for Alaskans. So I would urge you to slow down the pace on this one. Make sure that you get the testimony of qualified scientists and medical professionals, and make sure that you get the input of people in the areas that are most likely to be affected by this bill before you move forward. I am adamantly opposed to this bill in any event beyond the process, and I would urge you to take that the effect on health and the environment into account before you do anything else with this bill. That's it.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Pamela Miller and then Jay Hermanson.
Good afternoon. My name is Pamela Miller, and I'm Program Director and Biologist with Alaska Community Action on Toxics. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. Alaska Community Action on Toxics is a program of the Alaska Conservation Foundation, and we exist to protect human health and the environment from the toxic effects of contaminants. We work to ensure responsible cleanup of contaminated sites, and we strive to stop the production, the proliferation, and release of toxic chemicals. First, we are concerned that this bill moved through the Senate so quickly that there was not sufficient public, medical, and scientific input. Deference was given to the industry for invited testimony with the exclusion of the public. We hope the House will have more respect for a more participatory public process involving scientific and medical communities, as well as the public. We believe that the way this bill has passed through so far is really a shameful way to conduct lawmaking and hope the House does a better job. We are opposed to Senate Bill 299 because it exempts significant sources of air pollution from permit requirements and regulatory oversight. We believe that this bill will lead to adverse impacts on human health and the environment, violates requirements under the Clean Air Act, and jeopardizes our own state's implementation of the act as delegated by federal law. This bill blatantly ignores provisions of the Clean Air Act and would require federal takeover of management of Alaska's air resources. This would be inevitable. And there is no upper limit to the amount of air pollution exempted by this bill. Some of the facilities proposed by this bill for exemption include some of the largest sources of air pollution that we have, including well test flares used to dispose of oil and gas waste, diesel engines used to power drill rigs, asphalt plants, dirt burners, which are incinerators that are used to incinerate hazardous waste, contaminated soil, power plants and mines. And hazardous air pollutants from these facilities are known to cause both acute and chronic respiratory illnesses. These are soot, carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, volatile organic chemicals. And some of these facilities burning hazardous waste, the incinerators, produce cancer-causing air pollutants such as the dioxins and furans. These substances cause endocrine disruption, reproductive disorders, and other very serious health effects at extremely low concentrations. And I want to remind you that the EPA's own dioxin reassessment, we are already at or slightly below concentrations of dioxin in our body at which adverse health impacts may be seen. And again, incineration and other forms of combustion of fossil fuels do produce these cancer-causing and endocrine-disrupting substances. Endocrine disruptors such as dioxin alter sexual development, undermine intelligence and behavior, and make our bodies less resistant to disease, especially in children. Dioxins belong to a class of chemicals that are among the most persistent and harmful to humans. Atmospheric emissions from incinerators and other combustion processes are major sources of exposure to dioxins and furans, and certainly this bill does not consider that. We believe that this bill will have adverse economic consequences as well, including the imposition of federal highway fund sanctions. The detrimental health effects resulting from this bill will cause increases in health care costs for Alaskans, particularly those who already suffer from respiratory illnesses such as asthma. And I want to remind the committee that health care officials in the village of Nuiqsut have already been concerned over the last several years that air pollution from production facilities at Prudhoe Bay are causing dramatic increases in respiratory illnesses such as asthma, particularly during the air inversions of the winter months. If this bill were to take effect, health problems would be exacerbated. Currently, there are no hard data on air pollutants affecting human health in this area or any monitoring. Deregulation of oil facilities and other sources of air pollution in the Cook Inlet area would affect the public health, the greatest concentration of the population in our state. This bill does not consider science or public health. The state of Alaska already has the weakest standards permissible under the Clean Air Act. Please don't cause further harm. We respectfully request that you prevent the institution of this bill. And again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. I was wondering, could you just make reference to the point in the bill that would trigger an inevitable federal takeover of the Clean Air Act?
I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me, but I do think that because it would deregulate significant sources of air pollution, that the EPA would kick in and take over the program.
But doesn't the Clean Air Act require that many of those things be regulated at the source of production, similar to automobiles? I mean, there are certain requirements that automobiles require, that their exhaust not be over certain limits. However, when you get into an area that's non-attainment, such as Fairbanks or Anchorage, then the Act requires not only those those restrictions on the way that the engine burns and, you know, the fuel, but then more and more regulations can kick into place when you've got an area of non-attainment. It seems like those protections, you know, there are those regulatory protections then, and to classify then that these would be completely non-regulated, I don't know, is quite a fair assessment.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, also, this bill essentially brings us into compliance. It mirrors the federal act, doesn't it?
Representative Kelly, I'm not sure if the recorder could pick that up.
Okay, I was just saying.
This bill, I would like to answer that question, that this bill is less than the federal minimum under the Clean Air Act for these types of sources, and I'll just stop my testimony there.
Okay.
Chairman, I'm curious, it's less than the federal minimum.
Representative Kelly is just wondering, when you say less than the federal minimum, are you referring to particular words in the bill or some inevitable consequence of the bill?
Both. I think consequence and the language in the bill leads me to believe that it is deregulating significant sources of air pollution that should and are regulated under the Clean Air Act that would kick the federal program into effect.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask the sponsors, staff to come up and address that question?
Well, Representative Kelly, I'd like to get through the public testimony. We may get a number of questions that need clarification, and we can have Ms. Kreitzer come back up later.
Sure.
Okay. Representative Davies has a question.
You had indicated earlier that you were felt like there wasn't an opportunity for the public to come in on this earlier. Did you attempt to testify and weren't able to?
Yes, sir. I did testify before the Senate Finance Committee. Then the bill went on through, and the testimony before other committees was for invited testimony only, and that testimony was allowed only by industry representatives, not the public.
Just clarification, was the testimony in other committees before or after the Senate Finance?
After, as I recall, and I think before as well. I think we tried to testify on this bill two or three times.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Miller. Next, we'll go to Jay Hermanson and then Cheryl Richardson.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jay Hermanson. I'm the program director with the American Lung Association of Alaska. Our mission with the American Lung Association of Alaska is to prevent lung disease and promote lung health. We are a public health agency. The American Lung Association of Alaska is concerned about the capacity of Senate bill to effectively protect lung health of Alaskans, especially those with lung disease. If passed, Senate Bill 299 could possibly be detrimental to lung health by exempting non-road engines from Alaska's clean air laws. What concerns us, the American Lung Association, are potential emissions of high emissions of sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide from such non-road engines. These pollutants are a threat to human health in a small manner. Nitrogen dioxide can weaken our defenses against respiratory infections, especially in children. It can also cause trouble in asthma patients by lowering asthmatic sensitivity to threshold to substances that cause airway constriction. In terms of the sulfur dioxide emissions from the non-road engine, studies have shown that even a low dose of sulfur dioxide can cause an asthma attack. The American Lung Association of Alaska supports all clean air laws that effectively promote public health. The American Lung Association of Alaska is concerned, however, about the capacity of Senate Bill 299 to effectively protect the health of our most susceptible populations, those with asthma, emphysema, and other lung disease. That's all for my testimony, and the American Lung Association is able to help you in any way in the future in clean air laws. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mulder has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that testimony. Are you aware of any problem that we have today with non-road engines in relation to the Lung Association?
Not in relation to non-road with non-road engines. I don't have anything in particular. However, the emission of exhaust from one city bus can hasten an asthma attack, and potentially these so-called non-road engines could equal up to over 100 city buses. So even emissions from one city bus could cause respiratory distress for those with lung disease.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like you're trying to stretch the application of this bill a little far, aren't you?
Well,
yeah, I am. I'm referring the question back to you with the Lung Association again. I'm not sure who asked you to come out and testify or why you're testifying, but it seems like you're trying to far extend or extend beyond my understanding of where how this bill applies and where it would apply.
Mr. Hermanson, is there some particular wording in the bill that leads you to believe that you know, the city buses would be swept in under non-road engines?
I was using that as an example to highlight the susceptibility of all people who have lung health issues. I use that as an example only. Even someone with minor asthma symptoms is susceptible to an asthma attack. A very low doses of sulfur dioxide, which can be cross-referenced in the health effects of outdoor air pollution, a publication of the American Lung Association.
Okay, thank you. And I understand, you know, certainly lawnmowers, a portable generator, things of that nature. You know, you certainly wouldn't want to be in any kind of confined space with any of those running, but it's my understanding that the federal government is taking steps to force the manufacturers of those things to move towards cleaner burning technology. And that, I guess, is the regulation at the point of production of those devices where the Clean Air Act is causing modifications and cleaner running apparatus. And so I think, you know, those protections would still be in place, and the advances that we're making in those areas would not be precluded, I don't think, by the passage of this bill. But certainly, you know, if that's a wrong assessment, we certainly want to hear that here in the committee. Okay, next we'll go to Cheryl Richardson, and then I have Jenny Norris, and then Mike Cumby.
I'm here representing the Clean Air Coalition, which is a group of about 10 organizations. We're an organization that's been up for about 10 years now, and we've worked mostly on mobile sources, those are the cars and the trucks. But this bill is so egregious that it's gotten me out of my mobile source box, and I've come on over to talk about non-road engines today. We're very concerned that drilling rigs are industrial pollution. And if this was the kind of pollution that comes off of a lawnmower, I wouldn't be here today. These, as Mr. Hermanson mentioned, one drilling rig can equal the pollution from 100 city buses. And we know that buses are emitting the kind of pollution that cause respiratory disease and premature death in the United States. Those are the particles. These folks here have talked to you about all the different pollutants from the drilling rig. The nitrogen oxides and the sulfur dioxides and the carbon monoxide. At the Clean Air Coalition, I've been focusing most recently on particle pollution. Those are the soots and the little particles that those other pollutants turn into. Those are recently regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency to protect human health in the United States, given the fact that about 60,000 people, we estimate, are dying prematurely from exposure to these particles. So it's not a simple lawnmower we're talking about. It's one rig is the equivalent of 100 city buses. This is big-time pollution. In fact, when you look at the monitoring that's been done on the North Slope, Kuparuk background monitoring shows an unhealthy level of particulates at 50 micrograms per cubic meter. The federal standard's at 150. And in Anchorage, we find that 50 milligrams of particle matter are causing respiratory disease and bronchitis during our winter inversions. This is very likely the same thing that your folks from Nooksit are complaining about, especially if this is the background level is 50, and then during an inversion it's going to climb, especially if you're anywhere near a gross emitter like a drilling rig. And I'd like to let you folks know another thing that's a great concern to me as a an adult onset asthma victim. I was raised here in Anchorage, and frankly, I thought I had pretty good lungs until the last 10 years or so. Is the sulfur that we allow in our fuels, and that exacerbates the amount of pollution that's coming off of these drilling rigs. Alaska will be the only state in the union to allow its refiners to sell high sulfur fuel. High sulfur yields more particles in the air that yields more lung disease. So this is compounding the error by allowing these, proposing that these non-road engines would be exempted from pollution. Again, in Anchorage, we found that people were affected at as low as 50 micrograms per cubic meter, and probably lower, but we didn't test lower than that. Next time, we'll go in and check even lower. So from our viewpoint, we request that you please go out there and do additional monitoring on the slope. It's very important that we protect our workers. I mean, those are our children and our spouses and our neighbors who are out there working on the slope. They don't need to be exposed to pollutants at these unhealthy levels. And we must oppose this bill. I'm sorry Senator Lehman isn't there to talk to today. Would somebody please make a note to have him call me at 274-3639. I've been trying to reach him for a couple of weeks now. And he's my senator, and I think he's simply misinformed on this bill. I just can't believe Senator Lehman would do this to the workers on the slope or the people of New York City, the folks who have to live there. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Martin has a question.
I was wondering what Will Rigg or whatever she'd been on to do these testing. I worked up on the oil rig for 3 years and found it rather healthy, to say the least. Probably healthier than that lady that's been coughing in the mic all day. But anyway, it's been very clean up there. And I just was wondering, what in the world oil rig did you investigate or look into? Because I did not see that in the oil rigs. They're much more efficient now than I was last up there maybe 20 years ago. And I can see if you stood behind the bus, you talk about the city bus, that you shouldn't stand behind it if that's your problem. But certainly the oil rigs on the North Slope are not like that, and they shouldn't be compared to it. Well, where are you getting your facts?
Representative Martin, this is Cheryl Richardson. I think we've met over the years over different issues. The monitoring results I'm reporting came from industry at Kuparuk. Those were given to me by the Department of Environmental Conservation, who is using them in their permitting process. Again, the same process that would permit these rigs that we want to maintain. And the fact of the drilling rig releasing as much pollution as 100 city buses also came from the Department of Environmental Conservation. Since they are running scared from the legislature and from industry almost 100% of the time, I'm fairly confident that these numbers are accurate. Certainly, again, the 50 micrograms per cubic meter background of particle matter is from industry directly, and then the relationship to the bus is an analogy brought by the department.
You mentioned women and children. These are family and children.
Yes.
I never knew family members were allowed up there. They usually stay back home. Are there families up there now that are
My son was working on the slope. He most recently came home, and I'm very glad that he is home now. I told him that he's one of those people who's susceptible to bronchitis. He was raised, born here, born in Cosby, raised in Anchorage, and I have a lot of sympathy for those people in Nooksack. I just think that's criminal for us to go up there and pollute their community with our industrial, especially when we can reduce the pollution by reducing the sulfur in our fuel and controlling the pollution from our drilling rigs.
Thank you very much. Jenny Norris and then...
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, excuse me. Representative Grusendorf has a question.
Yeah, I think it was the last witness that indicated that we were the only state in the union to allow that high level of sulfur fuel to be burned in our rigs. Could she expand upon that?
Yes. The Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 required... the engine manufacturers, apparently, it requested this requirement so that they could meet tailpipe cleanliness standards. And so they requested that the fuel manufacturers produce a low sulfur gasoline, and low sulfur diesel. And Alaska and Hawaii were allowed to seek an exemption from this requirement. I called Hawaii, their air pollution agency, and they said, no, we chose to go with clean air. Our refineries are retrofitting right now, and we'll produce a low sulfur diesel. Alaska, under Walter Hickel, pursued the exemption and has continued that exemption under Tony Knowles. This is a major disappointment to us because most citizens instinctively understand that diesel is a noxious, toxic pollutant. And again, Alaska is about to become the only state in the union that will burn the high sulfur diesel throughout the state, basically.
Representative Grusendorf, you may remember, it was an issue a couple of years back on pursuing that waiver from the federal government, and it was granted at the time.
It is still in the process. There will be a new federal register announcement here within a month or two. Frankly, in Southeast, you folks import out of Seattle, and you, Juneau at least, tends to import low sulfur because it's cheaper on the open market. So Juneau is benefiting. I'm not sure about the other Southeast communities.
Thank you very much. We'll move on now to Jenny Norris.
Jenny Norris has had to leave.
Okay. Is Mike Cumby?
This is Mike Cumby here in Anchorage. I'm coming to you as not as an expert witness, but as somebody who likes to breathe clean air here in Alaska, and I like it a lot. I heard Senator Lehman's aide say that Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation is going beyond federal government air standards. I'm somebody that likes that idea. I think that the DEC should go beyond the federal government standards for our air. We deserve it. We have clean air. We want to keep clean air. We don't want to be having dirty air. Why does the legislature want to weaken our laws on air pollution in Alaska? We don't want to be breathing more pollutants. We want less pollutants. We want cleaner air. Don't try to shove this dirty air bill down our lungs. That's the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. We have up in Fairbanks Sarah Callahan signed up to testify. Sarah, are you online? Is Fairbanks online? Okay, we'll check back with them. We do have a number of people here in Juneau to testify. At this time, why don't we go to Al Ewing? And actually, I see John Stone. Mr. Ewing, were you going to come up with someone? Okay. Commissioner Shively.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Al Ewing, and I am the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. I appreciate this opportunity to offer testimony on SB 299. Commissioner Shively, Department of Natural Resources, is here with me as well, and John Stone, Air Program Director from DEC, is here with me as well. Governor Knowles has been very clear in word and deed that Alaska is open for business. The area-wide oil and gas leases on the Kenai Peninsula, in Cook Inlet, and on the North Slope, and his actions to cause renewed leasing of the National Petroleum Reserve are illustrations of his commitment. He has been equally clear that development in Alaska must be done right from an environmental perspective, and we have many illustrations of how that commitment is being kept as well. These two guiding principles, being open for business and doing it right, go hand in hand. Neither can endure for long without the other. SB 299 is the exact opposite of doing it right. If enacted, it would prohibit regulation of oil drilling rigs, which are significant sources of air pollution. Additionally, because of the imprecise wording of the bill, it can be interpreted to prohibit regulation of a wide range of significant sources of air pollution throughout the state. The bill would authorize even mandate significant backsliding in Alaska's air quality. It would result in dirtier air for Alaska. Even if its interpretation could be limited to oil drilling rigs, it would be unacceptable to the administration, and I am confident it would also be unacceptable to the people living, working, and playing on the Kenai Peninsula, in Cook Inlet, in the village of Nuiqsut, and more generally on the North Slope. The timing of this bill is also terrible. And the signal it sends is even worse. It has the potential to jeopardize the progress we are making on NPRA leasing and the expectations we have for other development in Alaska. Air pollution standards are designed to protect human health and the environment. They are not limited in their scope to protection of people who live in urban areas. All Alaskans have a right to clean air to breathe. I would like to share with you a quote from a letter sent last year to Mr. Frank Brown, Vice President of ARCO Alaska. The letter was from Benjamin Nagiak, Mayor of the North Slope Borough, and a quote from his letter follows. There is a significant concern regarding air pollution impacts to the health of Nuiqsut people. There is an increasing incidence of respiratory problems in Nuiqsut residents, and the dark or yellow cloud often seen over Prudhoe is now sometimes seen extending to Nuiqsut. In view of this, we are very worried that added air pollution from the Alpine development, processing plant, various emissions, etc., will cause even more problems. The North Slope, the Kenai Peninsula, and Cook Inlet are designated unclassifiable areas for the pollutants of particular concern, sulfur dioxide and oxides of nitrogen, that are emitted by oil drilling rigs. We believe that these areas do currently comply with air quality standards, though we have no data to confirm this belief. However, state-of-the-art air quality models tell us that if oil drilling rigs are allowed to operate unregulated, they will, in many cases, cause violations of clean air standards. The industry tells us we shouldn't regulate these rigs until we can confirm that there are air quality standard violations. The law tells us we have a responsibility to prevent violations of air quality standards. I think that is what the people who live, work, and play in these areas expect as well. In my judgment, it would be very unwise to wait until the health and welfare of Alaskans is adversely impacted before taking action. We understand that oil drilling rigs are mobile and that they need the flexibility to move quickly from site to site. We also understand that they need flexibility in how they operate. Commissioner Brown and I spent a day on the North Slope recently to get a firsthand view of these rigs and how they operate. We've been working with the industry for the past 3 years to design regulations that would provide flexibility and necessary air quality controls. We provided several alternative solutions to be considered. Each proposal has been rejected by the drillers as being unsatisfactory. Now we understand why. Their solution is no regulation. We are prepared to continue working with the industry to find a workable solution, but any solution must be acceptable not only to the industry, but also to the people who work, play, and most importantly, live and subsist off the natural resources of impacted areas. We are willing to participate in an industry-proposed facilitated stakeholder process to resolve the issue. Any solution, though, must result in compliance with air quality standards. The drillers responded with this legislation to gain exemption from air quality standards. We are given a variety of reasons why these rigs shouldn't be regulated. We are told that they don't emit enough pollution to be a problem. The fact is that a single rig can emit as much pollution as more than 100 city buses operating in a single, very crowded intersection. That's not an insignificant amount of pollution, as anyone who's gotten stuck behind a city bus can attest. And once again, state-of-the-art air quality models, not surprisingly, predict violations of air quality standards if these rigs are allowed to operate without controls. We are told that federal rules don't require these sources to be regulated. I think you'll hear from EPA later on today on that subject, but let me give you an example. Because the ARCO Warthog project was offshore, it was permitted by the federal government. Let me assure you, there has been no non-road engine in the state of Alaska that has ever been regulated by the state to the degree the drilling rig on the Warthog project was regulated. They required use of 0.06% diesel fuel and established an exclusionary zone around the project to prevent public exposure to air pollutants expected to exceed air quality standards. And remember, this was an offshore project. Like it or not, this bill is a formula for EPA takeover of Alaska's air quality program. And with this bill in place, we would have no defense. We are told that other drillers in other states aren't regulated. We've not done a broad survey to see what other states are doing because, frankly, we are not looking for the lowest common denominator. Our objective is to maintain clean air in ways that are consistent with the laws of the land and with common sense. In conversations with air program managers of other states, we find that drilling rigs and other non-road engines are using low sulfur fuel. That's the 0.05% fuel, because that is what is available in every state except Alaska. If we were using 0.05% sulfur fuel in Alaska, drilling rigs would be insignificant sources of SO2 and would not require regulation for that pollutant. I believe that drilling rigs in other states are complying with best available control technology standards as well. These BAT standards are designed to control NOx emissions, nitrogen oxide emissions. If drilling rigs were complying with BAT standards in Alaska, they would be insignificant sources of nitrogen oxide as well. I'm sure if we looked, we could find rigs in some states not using low sulfur fuel and not complying with BAT standards and not otherwise being regulated. But I would not find that a compelling reason to make that our standard for Alaska. We're also told that rigs are constantly moving and consequently couldn't be much of a problem for very long, even if standards were being violated. We understand that drilling rigs generally move around a lot, but we also know that some rigs remain on a site for extended periods of time, sometimes for a year or more. Mobility, though, doesn't seem like a very good justification for allowing violations of air quality standards. We have all seen the beater car going down the road spewing clouds of blue smoke as it goes. I don't know about you, but while I'm glad to see it go, the fact that it is moving doesn't make me feel a whole lot better. We're told we use too many conservative assumptions, that our models don't accurately predict what happens in the real world. Our models are the best available in the world, and the assumptions we use are standard assumptions spelled out in law and used throughout the country. We hope to be able to do ambient air quality monitoring in the future to assess air quality conditions and trends on the North Slope and elsewhere in the state. That will cost money we don't currently have. In the meantime, we will use the best tools we have, the models. In summary, for all the reasons outlined above, we very strongly oppose SB 299. It is a major threat to the air quality of Alaska. It would put our citizens and our environment at risk. Would very likely subject the state to a turnover of our air quality program to EPA. It is the opposite of doing it right, and we believe it is correctly being labeled the Dirty Air Bill. This concludes my testimony. I'd like to turn a few minutes over to Commissioner Shively to provide testimony.
And first of all, I think it's inappropriate to label any bill with an emotional title, so I disagree with you on that. The wording that would prohibit regulation of many sources, is that some of those sources, would it be portable generators, lawnmowers, all of those things would be...
Mr. Chairman, those are not the kinds of things we're concerned about. We're more concerned about asphalt batch plants, soil incinerators, mines, pulp mills if we had them. The way it's written, the looseness of the language, the vagueness of the language makes it open to basically exemption of any source here in the state as we read it. I think as the Department of Law reads it, as the EPA is reading it. So it's very
Your proposed regulations, though, would it have differentiated between a DOT road grader and the asphalt plant somehow?
Mr. Chairman, our proposed regulations were focused on drilling rigs with the intent of providing the flexibility to the industry that they need to operate. Again, recognizing they need to move, we don't want them tied down, so we're trying to provide flexibility to them. They in fact are regulated now. They come under the PSD program, and that is that puts some constraints on them, puts a lot of responsibility on them, that we're trying to make it easier for them, and have been working on that for some time to make it easier for them.
Okay. And other states that, and I understand they're using the low sulfur fuel, but you indicated that they probably do have sites where they're not using the low sulfur fuel, and it's on a facility that they have determined to be a non-road engine. But that hasn't triggered any kind of move from the federal government to take over their programs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's one thing to have laws on the books that you're not enforcing. It's another thing to take the laws off the book. And what I was suggesting, that there may well be states in the nation who have the appropriate laws on the book but are not enforcing them. So I'm not trying to suggest that there are states that have been authorized by EPA to operate the program that don't have appropriate laws.
Well, I've heard, in meetings in my office, and I'd like to know if this is not true, that some states have made the determination that things like drilling rigs will be considered in the non-road categories and not the permanent facilities. You know, are there states that have made that designation? Now, granted, they may be using the low sulfur fuel, but the fact that the state has made the determination, independent determination, to keep them in that category that's allowed by federal law has not caused trouble.
Mr. Chairman, we likewise have put drilling rigs in the non-road categories. I don't think you'll find other states classifying drilling rigs differently than we do here. The point is that these non-road rigs, non-road engines and drilling rigs in this state put out a lot more pollution than they do in other states because they are using the higher sulfur fuel. So when we regulate, when EPA regulated the Warthog project, their control was to require the use of lower sulfur fuel. So my point that I tried to make in my testimony was that if we had low sulfur fuel here, we're not asking for 0.05, we're asking for probably 0.15% sulfur fuel would be adequate to meet our standards here. And if we had BACT, the technology for control of the NOx, there would be no need to regulate these here either. They would be insignificant sources. We don't have the low sulfur fuel at this point, or the lower sulfur fuel. We have no confirmation that BACT is being used. So that puts us in a position, from an air quality point of view, to ensure that air quality standards are being met, that we look at these things. But the bill would take away the ability to do that.
Okay. And then just with regard to your recent trip to Prudhoe Bay, and I've only been there a couple of times, but I never experienced a dark cloud hanging over Prudhoe Bay, the fields flying in and out, driving up to, and is that a problem, and what data do you have?
Mr. Chairman, I quoted a letter from the North Slope Borough. Those are not my words. Those are words from the North Slope Borough that I provided for you. There is no ambient monitoring that I'm aware of that's being currently done on the North Slope, so we have no data. As I indicated, both the North Slope as well as Kenai, the primary areas where non-road engines are used and drilling rigs are considered unclassifiable because we don't have the data at this point in time.
Under the way the Clean Air Act operates, if you have an area that is either approaching or going over, you know, the threshold for determination of a non-conforming area, would you be able to move in with additional regulations if you have information that shows that you're approaching that trigger point?
Mr. Chairman, with the exception of Fairbanks and Anchorage, we treat the rest of the state as though we're in compliance with the standards for most parameters. There's a program under the Clean Air Act called the Prevention of Significant Deterioration Program that is designed to ensure that we, in fact, never get up to the standard, much less exceed it. And that, in fact, is the permit program that we're talking about that is being used now to regulate our point sources in these areas, as well as the non-road engines. Your bill, again, not your bill, but the bill that's before us, would take away the ability to consider those as we attempt to prevent violation of the standards.
Representative Mulder and then Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Al, that last statement causes me concern in the sense that, you know, you cited or quoted a letter from Mayor Negyek about the yellow cloud, and obviously you took that at face value. If you did, why didn't you proceed to do testing on the slope? I mean, obviously if it's such a concern, and you're going to propose regulations, you want to regulate an industry, why didn't you find out first if there's a problem?
Representative Mulder, again, the way you approach regulation in areas that are meeting the standards is to take steps to avoid violation. If we in fact took the approach you're talking about, we would monitor until we find that we've got a violation, and then we would go in and try to correct it. The program's not designed that way. The program is designed to minimize the amount of pollution going into the area in order to not violate the standards.
Have you done any testing up there at all?
Have we done any testing? The industry's done some testing, and that's...
But no, I mean, DEC.
DEC has not done testing.
Wouldn't it seem logical to do that first? I mean, to even know what the quality is, if there's any diminishment.
Well, again, Representative Mulder, the way the law works, when an applicant... Just let me finish here for a minute. When an applicant comes in and wants to operate in a clean air area, it is their responsibility to provide monitoring data to demonstrate they're going to be able to stay within the standards. So any information we have comes from industry. We'd be happy to have an air quality monitoring program on the North Slope and in other areas, but it costs money, and money's scarce here in the state, as you know.
Well, you certainly have the statutory authority to do a test monitor up there, do you not?
Certainly. Yes, we do.
I mean, if there was a concern by an influential individual, such as the mayor of the North Slope Borough, saying, you know, we might have a problem here, wouldn't it seem, you know, logical to do some sort of testing before you start raising the issue to such a level of acrimony as you have?
Representative Mulder, we're not the one that raised the issue. I think the bill came from the legislature. We're responding to the bill.
Well, then, okay, that leads into the next question. Is this a brand new issue to you, or has the industry, in fact, tried to work with you over a period of the last 24 months?
Representative Mulder, I would turn it around a little bit and say that we have attempted to work with the industry for the last 36 months or longer to try to resolve this issue. So, no, it's not a new issue to us. We have been diligently trying to resolve the issue. A number of proposals have gone forward proposing solutions. We met with the industry, all of the industry, in, I believe, October, looked at all of the air issues in front of us and set some priorities for bringing those to resolution. The industry set the priorities and basically said non-road engines is number four on our list, and we'd like for you to deal with these other things, like getting us our permits out first, and we can deal with non-road engines in time, meaning probably this spring. We, in fact, have had other meetings with them. Industry has proposed, the producers have proposed, Mrs. Aoga, BP, ARCO, and so forth, have proposed a facilitated stakeholders group to further address the issue. We're willing to do that. But while we're talking about this, the drillers have basically come forward and thrown legislation in to try to fix it in another way.
Mr. Chairman, if I could conclude. Al, you said that you've been working with them. Can you provide us with any documentation to verify positions that you have said and offers or considerations that you have made, that the department has made to the affected parties to that end?
Sure. Representative Mulder, we can certainly do that, including proposed regulations that went partway through the public review process before we pulled them back. Those two or three, we can provide all of those to the committee if that would be satisfactory to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have Representative Grusendorf, Foster, and then Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't think I was going to get a chance to make a comment on this dirty air bill. You know, right now we're talking in terms of possibly the air, we call it air primacy between EPA and the state of Alaska. Is that the term we use, primacy?
Representative Grusendorf, that's a term that is used.
And yes. Right now we're working with that. I guess I have a question. There's the term industry, working with the industry, and then I often wonder, well, what part of the industry are we talking about? BP is a pretty big industry, isn't it?
BP is a very big industry, yes.
Very big industry. And you received a letter, I believe, not too long ago from that industry, did you not?
Maybe you ought to go
probably
further.
Many,
a lot of
many,
letters from a lot of industry, a lot of letters from BP. So,
did you receive the one where they say BP has already notified the drilling contractors of our opposition to resolve this issue through legislation, and that the drilling contractors need to work with DEC to resolve the drilling rig air permit issue?
Representative Grusendorf, we did in fact receive the letter to which you refer.
So when we're talking about the industry, we're talking not necessarily the good corporate neighbor, in this case BP. Has there been any other major oil companies that have indicated? You mentioned ARCO. What are their feelings on this? Are we talking about the industry? Are we really talking about those drilling contractors that are using a diesel fuel that is higher in sulfur content than most would use?
Representative Grusendorf, it is in fact the drillers that seem to be at the focus of this effort to get a bill passed. My understanding is that ARCO would very much like to find another way to resolve this issue.
So, Mr. Chairman, what we're talking about when we use the term industry now, we don't necessarily mean the big oil companies. We're talking about the contract or subcontractors, contractors. And I think that's important that we have that understanding here, that we just don't lump it all in and look at it at that point. Mr. Chairman, at this point, that's as far as I want to go.
Hey, Representative Foster?
Yeah, now you were talking about dirty buses here a little while ago, and so did every person that testified earlier. I don't know, where were they, out of Anchorage? But you know, Governor Knowles, and then you mentioned that the governors before them also acquired an exemption or a waiver from EPA air pollution standards over the years, the last 10 years, I guess, probably on inversions in the cities.
Representative Foster,
for the
not
air pollution standards. But what are these waivers you're talking about, the exemptions from the...
Yeah, Representative Foster, I'm not... I think what...
I know Fairbanks gets these exemptions in the winter when you've got inversions.
What Fairbanks and Anchorage have are not exemptions, but they have violations that they're attempting to deal with. I think what the previous testifiers were speaking to is the low sulfur exemption that both the previous administration and this administration have sought for motor vehicles. Okay. Not for non-road engines, but for motor vehicles, mobile sources. If you go back to the Clean Air Act, mobile sources, non-road engines, stationary sources are the things we're talking about. The low sulfur was aimed at mobile sources, your car, my car, that sort of thing. And the reason,
I don't know. I'm trying to think in my mind, like, what's your department doing about these dirty buses? I don't think I've got five or six in my entire district, and I've never been sitting behind one at an intersection, like you were saying. I'm not sure what the problem is.
Yeah.
Let's say in Anchorage or Fairbanks, and it's 50 below, and you're sitting behind a bus.
Mm-hmm. You've never had that experience?
I've never have.
Okay. Tell me
what your department is doing to solve that. What I'm trying to do in my mind is trying to think, are you saying it's okay to have this pollution in the cities and you're not doing anything about it, but you don't want that pollution in the bush areas? Or is this a double standard that we're getting at? Or
Representative Foster, it's nothing like that. I think basically what we're saying is that wherever you live, whether you're in the bush or whether you're on the Kenai Peninsula, whether you're in a suburb of Anchorage, the Mat-Su Borough, wherever you are, you're entitled to have clean air to breathe. So wherever we've got pollution sources that may, in fact, violate the standards, we've got approaches to dealing with them. We'd like to retain those approaches for non-road engines.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah, I have.
Just very briefly.
Very briefly.
To Representative Foster.
Okay.
Yeah, that is one of the things that the urban areas are willing to share with the rural areas, and that's pollution.
If I had known. Representative Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, what is the date of that letter you have from the mayor?
Representative Martin, I believe it is May of 1997.
97, yeah, about
in that
a year
neighborhood,
ago.
Right.
Did anyone from your department attempt to go up there and immediately investigate this very hazardous condition for health? Would you just let the letter sit or what?
Representative Martin, the letter, in fact, was directed to ARCO and not to DEC. I'm not quite sure how the letter got to us, whether ARCO sent it to us or what. But every day, with every action we take, we in fact are attempting to minimize the pollution that is emitted on the North Slope, whether it's non-road engines or whether it's major stationary facilities. So we in fact are addressing those kinds of issues. Every now and then, it's good to do a ground truth to see if we're doing enough. And I think it's probably time to get some monitoring going up there on the ground to see what's happening in the ambient air.
Well, Chairman, I'm kind of smooth. You say you have the authority and so on. And at first I thought you got the letter direct. Now we find it's indirect. But it doesn't matter how you got it. What did you do to follow up to verify the terrible conditions? You're still waiting to go up? You're still thinking about it? Or what?
Well, Representative Martin, as I indicated, the actions we take every day are aimed at minimizing those kinds of effect.
Are you up there now?
Results. Pardon me?
Is there someone up there now?
We probably have staff working on permits right now that would
They can look up in the air and see and verify?
Well, let me go back again, Representative Martin. A lot of what we rely upon is models to predict what's happening, and models have proven to be very reliable tools to in fact predict what's likely to happen in the real environment, and we use those on a continuing basis. Yes.
No one from your staff that's up there, no matter for what reason, has ever seen this that you know of.
I'm not going to comment further on what we may have observed in the way of a yellow cloud or a brown cloud or whatever, Representative Martin.
Shouldn't you? If it's that dangerous, someone can see it.
Again, I'm quoting from a letter from the people who live there, in New Wixit. I think it's raised an issue that I think you and we probably both ought to be focusing on.
North Slope, the city of Broward is considerably distant from the oil rigs and so on. Did he see it in the oil rig fields, or did he see it in the city of Barrow?
Representative Martin, we will provide you a copy of the letter, and you can read it and interpret it for yourself. I think what he's referring to is the people of New Wixit, the impact of the air in terms of increased cases of asthma, and the observed yellow and brown cloud. Those are the words of the mayor, not mine. So we can provide you a copy of that letter, and you can read it.
It's pretty broad place in North Slope, Borough, isn't it?
Yes, yes, sir, it is.
And next, I have Representative Kelly and then Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had to step out while Mr. Ewing was testifying, so forgive me if you answered these questions. But there was someone on the teleconference who earlier said, was talking about federal standards and takeover of monitoring by the feds. We are not now currently complying with federal standards. We're not out of compliance with them, but we are not doing something that they allow us to do. Is that correct? And that is make a distinction between the road or the mobile and non-mobile sources. Is that correct?
Representative Kelly, we believe at this moment in time that our laws are consistent with the federal laws, and we, in fact, are doing what the federal laws require. The concern I think you were hearing expressed is if this bill were passed, our ability to operate the prevention of significant deterioration program were taken away, our ability to regulate a number of other sources were taken away, that we no longer would be in compliance with the federal law and would be subject to the federal government coming in and taking over the program. Something that's not without precedent. It happened to the state of Idaho. I think EPA is more than happy to do it. It's a moneymaker for them. They have a lot higher fees than we do.
Yeah, well, that was interesting and informative, but the question was, if we adopt this bill, are we then going to be out of compliance with the federal government's requirements?
Representative Kelly, very clearly, yes.
Okay, and will it have to do with the fact that we are out of compliance with the federal standards as they exist, or that because we had standards over and above them, we can now not go back?
When you use the term standard, I'm not quite sure if you're referring to the ambient air quality standards or if you're talking to
I guess regulatory. Most of what I'm talking about is that it seems the purpose of the bill is or some of the purpose of the bill is for the mobile versus the non-mobile.
Right, right.
But we're now, DEC is not treating them differently, correct?
Representative Kelly, we in fact do treat oil rigs different than mobile sources. Mobile sources, again, are things like the automobile you drive. A non-road engine is something like a drill rig. Stationary source is something like a power plant that's fixed in place. So we do not have rules now that treat non-road engines differently or more stringently than the federal government does. And I think I gave you the example of the Warthog project, offshore operation, where EPA did the permitting. What they did for the Warthog was much more stringent, much more rigorous than anything we have ever done or anything that we would contemplate doing with any non-road engine in the state. So we can draw a conclusion, I think, from that. We don't have to speculate. We've got an example of how they operate.
Just reading through the sponsor statement, and this is what prompts my questions with you. It says, as early as 1990, the Environmental Protection Agency firmly recognized the distinction between mobile and stationary sources of emissions. Most stationary sources are determined to be significant sources of emission. That's actually the next paragraph, excuse me. The DEC regulators do not distinguish between mobile and stationary sources of emissions when determining whether an air quality control permit is required.
Representative Kelly, that is an incorrect statement. We do distinguish between mobile sources and non-road engines.
Okay. Do you make distinctions in regulations or in practice?
Both.
Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll forego the opportunity to label the bill. Can you go back to the what you think the issues are here in terms of the low sulfur fuel exemption, that is the fuel that's at 0.05%. Can you characterize for me your sense of how big a problem that is? Is that fuel not available, or is it expensive, or what is the reason why this is an issue? And then that's the first question. And the second one, you mentioned VAT standards. I assume that's best available technology or something like that. Can you talk? Are there issues surrounding those in this mm-hmm. in this debate as well? And could you flesh those out for us?
Representative Davies, I'd be happy to. So I think with regard to the low sulfur fuel, it is not generally available in Alaska because we have the waiver for mobile sources, automobiles, mobile sources. On the North Slope, in order to have lower sulfur fuel, we're not talking about going to the 0.05, but lower sulfur fuel, the producers...
What would you be talking about going to?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, excuse me. What would you be talking about going to?
Probably 0.15% would be adequate to...
0.15?
0.15, yes, would be adequate to meet the standards here in the state. In order to provide that fuel, the operators, BP and ARCO, would have to upgrade their topping plants to provide that fuel. They tell me that that's probably about a $500 to $1 million expenditure to do that. They seem willing to do that. They are not the obstacle. They seem willing to make that upgrade and provide the lower sulfur fuel, which leaves the remaining issue, and that's best available control technology. And I think the chair correctly pointed out earlier that that for new engines, it is a federal requirement that BACT be incorporated on those engines as they're produced. What we need is something that assures that BACT, in fact, is applied on an ongoing basis for older engines, and that's the issue when it comes to nitrogen oxide emission. What we had proposed was a demonstration every 5 years that these engines, in fact, do comply with BACT, and there's a very specific procedure laid out in federal law for doing that, and that's our proposal, that demonstration be made. So if, in fact, the engines had BACT technology in place, there would be no issue with regard to NOx or nitrogen oxide either. So those are really the two things that we need in order to provide the flexibility that the industry wants. That burden would in fact be on the drillers rather than on the producers.
And then one follow-up. Then, and with respect to the models, then you have run what you characterize as the best available technology in terms of models available, and the results of that modeling indicates that without going to this intermediate sulfur level fuel and without these BACT, that you would generate, given normal operating conditions up there, you would generate significant air pollution.
Yes, the models indicate that there, in fact, would be violations of the clean air standards without some kind of control. The kind of control that we are now employing through our existing regulations and the kind of control that we would like to be able to apply in the future through a more flexible program, we can have a meeting of minds with the industry.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Foster?
Yeah, briefly, I want to go over these fines. Have you had any fines or violations in the last year or two up on the North Slope on these rigs?
Any fines or violations? You want the list?
Quite a few, huh?
I'm not saying quite a few, but there in fact are. Enforcement actions have been taken. We can.
Could you just guess?
Pardon me?
Yeah, just make a guess, like you had seven of them in $300,000 or something.
Yeah, Representative Foster, I wouldn't want to guess. If you want the information, we'll provide you specific.
I'd be tickled to see that.
Okay.
And how? What are the conditions for those? Like, they have to shut down before they could open up and clean up their act type of thing when you violate them? Or depends on how serious the action.
Yeah, it's very, very case specific.
Okay, now you mentioned earlier that the cities have been violated and fined. Like, what is it, Fairbanks?
Fairbanks.
And the inversions, if they exceed a certain limit on a winter day or something. How do they pay these violations? Is that the DEC or EPA? Or I'm just trying to figure out what procedures are in mind and how they would apply to a different set of procedures under this bill.
There's both Fairbanks and Anchorage, there is a very specific attainment plan that's been worked out between the state and the local government, approved by the federal government, to move them from non-attainment to attainment. And those of you who live in Fairbanks or Anchorage, probably pretty familiar with those plans.
Do they actually pay the violation?
We're not.
Here, I'll give you an example. I know, like, DOT gets cited by the state fire marshal or DEC or something, you know. One state department here in Alaska violating another state department and fining them. And, like, it's all kind of a joke to me. I've never seen any supplementals here where DOT needs more money to pay back to the Attorney General for something, you know. Do the cities actually pay to somebody?
Representative Foster, we're not talking about a case where the cities would be fined. The hammer for the cities is if they don't have attainment plans, if they don't move toward compliance with those, that the federal government will withhold their transportation funds. So very, very large hammer.
Have they done that?
Have they done it? Not in this state yet, because everything's moving forward as it's supposed to. While they're violating the standards, they're on the path that leads them to compliance of the plan that's been approved by both the federal and state government.
Okay. Just on that point, Mr. Chair.
Representative Davies and then Representative Grusendorf.
Very briefly, in Fairbanks, the people who are paying are the individual people who pay for the inspections in the IM program. And if there were to be alternative fuels, paying for the additional cost of alternative fuels, those kinds of solutions. So it's right now order of several million dollars a year that the citizens of Fairbanks are coughing up, so to speak, to try to improve the quality of the air.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make a statement. I want to see if you agree with me one way or the other on it. Because of the warthog experience that happened there, which EPA evidently had the primacy or oversight of that project. Do you think that's the reason why BP and Exxon, basically after they take their cut up, there's not much left there for the others?
ARCO rather than Exxon.
ARCO. Do you think that's one of the reasons why they are hesitant and want these people to work with DEC to not legislate it for fear, perhaps, that we may become out of compliance in the state?
Representative Goosen,
they would be then subject to the.
Let me say that is one very good reason. I think they've seen a practical example of how it's done when the federal government does it. But another even bigger reason is I think that all industry, at least all big industry, anyone who's been around for a while, understands that if the federal government ran the program, it would cost 3 to 4 times more than it does now just because of their fee structure. So it's another very good reason to find a way to operate this within the state structure.
So not only the EPA's regulation, but also the EPA's fees that they would have.
Right. Clean Air Act fixes the fees that they have to charge. And when we put our program together, we were able to carve that down much lower than the federal government levels.
If we had a degradation to the point that the North Slope was a non-attainment area, you would be able to kick things into place, basically, to rectify that situation, wouldn't you? Even if this legislation were passed, I mean, it would be out of compliance. And what steps, then, would the state agency take if we were out of compliance with the air quality standards?
Representative Terrio, I think you're making a giant leap forward. So I think if this legislation were passed, the next likely scenario is that you will see the federal government in running the program. I think the law is set up to prevent, to avoid getting to a non-attainment situation. So I think there are a lot of steps that take place between where we are now and getting to a non-attainment situation on the North Slope or the Kenai or anywhere in the state where we currently have attainment. So it's a long ways down the road.
Wouldn't they have to have some information indicating that we were in fact going to go out of it, out of compliance before they would step in and deem our program to be?
No, the basis for, Mr. Chairman, the basis for EPA either delegating or leaving a delegated program in place is not the quality of the air, it's the quality of the legal structure that you have in place to maintain the quality of the air. So they need look no further than the laws that we've got on the books or the laws that are being passed or the regulations we're putting in place to determine whether the air program remains with the state of Alaska or with the state of Idaho or any other state or goes back to federal control. So a whole lot of things would happen before we got to a state of non-attainment on the North Slope or anywhere else.
Okay. Commissioner, if I could just ask you to hold for just a second. We have one more individual up in Fairbanks. She was absent when I went to the Fairbanks site. Before we lose our teleconference site, I'd like to offer Sarah Callahan an opportunity to testify. Ms. Callahan, are you still there? Perhaps we waited too long. Okay, Commissioner Shively, if you'd like to go ahead.
Chairman, for the record, my name is John Shively. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I'll be brief. I would just like to remind the committee, for those of you who don't remember, that Al Ewing previously ran EPA in the state of Alaska, so he has some knowledge of what the federal government might or might not do in the situation. I think the Knowles administration, in cooperation with a lot of work that's been done by the legislature, has been very active in trying to increase oil development in the state, and whether it's on our state lands with things like the area-wide sale and with the North Slope or Cook Inlet, or whether it's pushing for NVRA or pushing for ANWR, looking at the development of new fields like Alpine, Badami, and Liberty, and we've all looked forward to increased oil activity both on our lands and federal lands. And to me, this piece of legislation really just sends the wrong message. It sends the wrong message to America, where a lot of people don't think we know how to do our business, although I think we do. I think it sends the wrong message to the Department of Interior at a very critical time when they're reviewing what they think that they might lease in the National Petroleum Reserve. And certainly I think it probably sends the wrong message to some Alaskans. To me, to completely exempt one part of the industry from permitting and regulation or substantially undercut the ability to do that doesn't make sense. I want to give you two sort of things, little stories. One, earlier this winter, the governor and I visited one of the Doyon drilling rigs hosted by Randy Ruderick, and he was very pleased and made a point to the governor that one of the things they were doing to decrease air pollution was to make more of their rigs electric. So there are things that are doing, and I think the industry can be proud of that. And I think there are opportunities to work with them to solve these problems rather than look for a total exemption. In terms of the North Slope borough, although I have not observed this cloud myself, while we were negotiating with the North Slope borough to come together on our positions on NPRA, one of the key people up there that works for the mayor is Richard Glenn. Richard is from that area, but he's a geologist, and he's probably, I would say, within the administration about as pro-oil as you can get. And one of the points that he made when we were discussing this, and he was very, very supportive of leasing in NPRA, he said, but when we do this, we really need to look at the air quality, because there is no question that the people of Nuiqsut are concerned about what they're seeing in the quality of their air. So it is a concern up there, whether we've been, we're there or not. And it's, when I see someone like Richard expressing that concern, I mean, it's a concern that I have. We believe that there are other options to resolve these issues, that we don't need this legislation, that we can work as we have with other industries, and we want to try to do that. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll cease my testimony.
Representative Foster.
Yeah, well, you brought up the village name again. What was the date on that letter? You said 1997?
May 1997.
That's been almost a year ago.
Close.
Yeah. What has DEC done? What kind of investigation? Getting back to Terry, it's almost as if you never answered the question. What have you done about that yellow cloud? Did you go up there and send people up there? Or?
Well, Representative Foster, I think I've attempted to respond to that question in three or four different ways. But again, in an area like the North Slope, we deal with air pollution by trying to prevent it. So permits that we issue, the limits we place in the permit, are the ways. In fact, we try to prevent that kind of thing from happening. To the extent that there is a cloud up there, you're right, we're failing. But if we're failing, the answer is not to deregulate. The answer is to look and see what else we need to be doing to attain the level of air quality that we need to have there.
It seemed to me that, and the concern over the citizens, you know, and I understand that they can express their concern, but I guess based on what? I mean, we haven't been provided with any real information to say that there's a problem. Now, I understand your concern that doesn't mean that you set upon a course to create a problem, but what problem are we at?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can respond.
Anybody can express concern that, you know, they want to breathe clean air. Certainly
that
I do.
That is correct. And I think the issue for people on the North Slope is, I think they, although they have concerns, they don't at this point believe that the industry is out of compliance. However, we're seeing a lot more increased activity. 5 or 6 years ago, the drilling industry was almost in the tank. And there were extra drill rigs, and drill companies got shut down, and there, a lot of people didn't look for much more. Yeah. Now, there are more fields, more rigs being ordered, and rigs as well as flares and other things, there's no question that they add to what's going in the air. I don't think anyone can deny that the more activity you have, the more things you're putting into the air. Now, is that in violation? Well, by the modeling that we've done at this point, as I understand it, we don't believe so. Can we get there? Yes, we believe with increased activity that we could get there, and we don't want to.
Representative Davies and then Kelly.
Thank you.